Business Brief, the most widely read business magazine in South Africa, brings you the Business Brief interview of the week.
So welcome back to Contemporary Business, and this is the Business Brief interview, and I'm very happy to say that Business Brief is the number one online and in printed form edition read business magazine in South Africa for one very particular reason. It's a thought leadership magazine, and the people that publish it know what they're talking about. And I'm talking to one of those people now. It's someone I've had the pleasure and privilege of knowing for the last 25 years, and that's John Buerta, who's Chief Operating Officer of Global Business Solutions. John, thanks so much for joining me here, talking about your article, What the COVID-19 Presidential Announcements Mean for Your Business.
Thank you, Arthur, and hello to the listeners.
I'm interested in two things. Your recommendations in terms of the 7 points that you take out of the presidential announcement, but I'm actually as interested in talking to the market out there, the business market out there, your clients out there, about how they need to prepare themselves for what's coming down the line, particularly bearing in mind the trends which are being set around the world by governments around the world. But let's get to the presidential announcements. They're pretty old now, you know, literally a couple of days old is pretty old in this business at the moment. What is it that you've taken out of the presidential announcements in terms of his key aspects in his proclamation that you think businesses need to be acutely aware of?
To answer your question, the primary thing I took out of the president's proclamation of disaster situation is that's coming to the fore is the whole issue and the primacy of social distancing. If we take a look at the first and foremost question businesses need to ask themselves, how they can go about giving effect to social distancing without permanently prejudicing their businesses. In other words, what is absolutely essential and what's not essential has to and be endeavored to be provided from a distance or remotely.
John, let's talk about that. As a business, what are you supposed to do in this regard, bearing in mind your employees work in very, very close proximity? What on earth are you supposed to do to make sure that you give vent to social distancing on the one hand, but that you remain productive on the other?
There's a reason why we've been told we're operating in a VUCA environment with the A standing for ambiguity, because you've got so many different pressures and forces pulling you in different directions. But either the first thing, obviously, that businesses need is a business response plan or business continuity plan. Although there are common elements that need to be addressed across all businesses, the nature and extent of the response will differ on the merits of each case. Because as you say, retail environment, for example, in a retail environment, shop assistants are most of the day within a 2-meter range of customers, whereas in other instances, head offices are being shut down and people are working remotely because they are tech-based jobs and they lend themselves to remote engagement. But I think to answer your question structurally, first thing is have a business continuity plan that looks at your supply chain, tries and anticipates the impact on your clients and customers and, of course, your employees. The second thing you need to do, and that came out of the Department of Employment and Labor's publication, either suggesting 4 levels of risk. So businesses should be assessing their businesses and saying they're either extremely high risk, medium risk, or low risk. And of course, various parts of the business will fall under those 4 categories. Organizations' response in terms of preventative measures, masks, hand sanitizer, social distancing of 2 meters, will obviously depend on the merits of each case. What does concern me, though, is the whole force majeure situation starting to kick in. With BMW, for example, Ford, you know, various businesses now starting to close their plants for the next month, next few weeks, maybe a month or two. And we see, obviously, the schools have been shut down until the 15th of April, potential extensions of the back end of that. And we see restaurants and other businesses serving alcohol and being consumed on the premises. We see that now being curtailed after 6 at night till 9 in the morning. You know, and I can carry on giving examples. We even see the criminalization either of people that know that they have potentially diagnosed as being positive in respect of COVID and then going out, they could even be charged with murder if someone died off the back end of the direct link.
So what do we do if a business prior to the coronavirus situation kicking in has already been virtually on the doorstep of business rescue, if not complete closure, and now because of coronavirus is being forced into a situation where they have no choice but to severely constrict the way they operate, the number of employees they have within their operation, etc., etc. Are we talking about normal labor relations processes that they follow? Are they able to expedite those processes because of the immediacy of closing down production in some instances? How does one treat the Labor Relations Act and the processes involved in industrial relations in South Africa in such an absolutely pressurized situation?
Father, absolutely. And I'm pleased you asked that question because I get very concerned when there are certain stakeholders that seem to suggest austerity measures must come at all costs. And as you indicated, 80-90% of all businesses in SA have been under restructuring, and it's agnostic to sector. You know, it's a banking industry, it's manufacturing, it's retail. I saw now, my daughter just showed me that Gion Wired have now made a final call. These stores will be permanently closed. They're pulling the plug there finally. So I think to answer your question directly, the first thing, Ava, that employers and businesses need to be aware of is that the standard leave provisions, first of all, apply. Yes, there are calls to make it more flexible, but at the end of the day, employees need to access their sick leave if they do, you know, if they are subject to potential infection. Once the sick leave has been exhausted, the companies may allow them to access annual leave, and then when annual leave is exhausted and they're still not ready to return to work, unpaid leave. You know, we're not in an economic environment where we've got this wonderful ability to just give special leave and on a paid basis indefinitely. So I would encourage companies to apply basic conditions of employment. There are some nuances in there, either, as you know well. For example, there's a clause in the BCA that allows you to drop the payment of people for sick leave by 25%, but then to extend their sick leave by 25%. You can stagger lunch breaks to try and mitigate social distancing issues. You can look at different shift patterns, etc. So just basic conditions allows you to do certain things. The next thing is employees who abuse the situation, you know, and quite frankly commit misconduct, still subject to disciplinary protocols. And that's why companies need trackers and questioning techniques. And if employees allege that they or a family member have been subject to potential scares in this regard, you know, ask them for a written statement so that later on, if you do find that misrepresented something, you can act on that. But the real point I want to get to, Ava, and I know I'm rambling on, I apologize, but the real point I'm getting to is, bottom line is that Section 189 operational requirements processes will be unavoidable, as you said, especially on top of the pre-existing trading headwinds. Government have tried to put certain measures in place. So any company that is on the brink of business rescue, company that is really facing dire economic situations, the first thing that they, that the Department of Employment and Labor and government have done is they've made available UIF. Concessions. So employees who've been laid off, or even if the hours of work have reduced, either the Minister of Employment and Labour has offered to send UIF officials to the premises to expedite those affected employees claiming UIF. I also saw today the Temporary Employer Employee Relief Scheme, old training layoff scheme, which was so slow and bureaucratic. They've unplugged that. They've taken the bottlenecks out, and the CCMA have got a very special multi-stakeholder forum that will immediately consider and respond to training layoff payments and paying for training. So I recommend that employers try and tap into UIF training layoff money, looking at unpaid leave, but obviously at the end of the day, frankly, they've got to understand where the tipping point is, and then they must follow 189 to its conclusion.
I need to talk to you more specifically about the procedural mechanisms involved in expediting these kinds of activities as employers. So I'm going to please ask you to come back onto my show. But for the time being, thank you so much for being on Contemporary Business at such very short notice, John.
Thank you, and all the best. Thank you.